Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 160, LSU Tigers football preview, recorded Monday, September 1st, 2015. Tonight, Shane Bailey and Blair Smiley are joined by Stephen Baker from AndTheValleyShook.com to see what surprises the Mad Hatter has up his sleeves for this upcoming season. Can they rebound from what Tiger fans consider a disappointing season? All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 160. This is going to be our Louisiana State University Tigers preview podcast. So joining me tonight, we'll get right into some introductions. We'll have Blair Smiley. Welcome, Blair.
It's locked up for me. I'm okay. Hi, how's it going?
Good.
There you go. You locked up on us.
Right off the gate, too. Right off the gate. That's never a good sign.
Well, you know, our picture looks good from here on out, so we're going to hope everything looks well. So joining me tonight is Blair Smiley. Welcome, Blair.
Good to be back, Shane. Go to hell, Ole Miss.
There we go. And joining us from And the Valley Shook, Steve Baker, or as he is known on Twitter, ATVS Poser. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. And yeah, go to hell, Ole Miss. Mm-hmm.
That's his mantra. So if you listen at all, it's said almost every other podcast with him. So, and he always finds a reason to say it. So that it's not without.
There
reason.
There are plenty of reasons to damn Ole Miss to hell. So
yeah. I mean, we are on Ole Miss's their rival, which is LSU. So we gotta. You know, their rival that LSU doesn't realize is their rival.
That's kind of like Tennessee and Alabama.
Right.
We sort of have free-flowing hostility towards everyone. We don't like to break people up into little groups. We hate all of you.
Well, it does take, Kentucky, as a Kentucky fan, we fight the same battle. We have rivals, too, that we say are our rivals, but we end up losing to them anyway, so it doesn't – I don't have a large leg to stand on this conversation. But I do have hatred in my heart for a couple of teams. So
there you go. Kentucky's rival is just football in general, just waiting for basketball season.
October only means horses and basketball. It's a, what does it mean? We're in the heart of football season. What do you mean?
We might be good this year. We might actually, give Kentucky a run this year. So I know that's getting way ahead of ourselves, but LSU basketball might be relevant.
I mean, Kentucky's good until they get to the Final Four championship game.
Yeah, no, you're completely right. The last couple of years, so.
Oh, what a huge problem being bad in a Final Four.
Yeah, no, you're right. LSU, from a basketball standpoint, I mean, we talked about it some last year. Big uptick for your program, and more good things to come ahead. So, but I know we will turn a lot of fans off real quick if we start going into basketball right before the kickoff of football. So we won't torture you yet. Thanks for joining us. I know. We enjoy every year you've been able to come on and do this podcast. I think this is your third year in a row for us, I think.
I think it's the third, yeah.
So we appreciate you doing it. It's a lot of fun. You give us a lot of insight on the LSU program, and we reference it frequently throughout the podcast. Whether it was correct or incorrect, we might reference it both ways. But
last year hurt, so But I will say one of the great things about being an LSU fan is that we can be incredibly disappointed over a 4-4 season. That's actually a mark of how good the program is, that we look at 4-4 as like the apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. And it's been good. I mean, maybe this will be the third year in a row that y'all are terrible, just like the last 2 years.
Yeah, right? Yeah, terrible, where we had like a better record than almost everyone else except for Alabama.
Exactly. And
that's what it kind of comes down to, is we were writing about this on the website. Our failures are pretty much everybody else's successes. And honestly, that's a good thing. That shows the standard that Les Miles has put in Baton Rouge, that we expect winning. We want to compete with Alabama. And, you know, being second place isn't good enough for the fan base. We're mad that we finished third. And that's, in a way, a positive and shows the health of the program.
Now, is it more that you were a quiet third or that you were third?
It was that we were a quiet third. Well, we were a loud third at first. I mean, losing to Mississippi State and Auburn the way we did to start the year, definitely starting 0-2 in conference for the first time in a long time, definitely put us off on the wrong foot. And then, you know, the season rebounds, things are going well, and then that Alabama game just really – LSU had the ball tied. They had the ball inside the 5-yard line, first and goal, with a minute to play in a tie game, and somehow lost. I don't know the win probability on that, but that's almost impossible to do. And that was just the kind of season it was. LSU, I mean, everyone talks about the luck that Les Miles has had. He pretty much had, you know, a decade worth of bad luck thrown into that one season. And, you know, karma comes back and bites you. So an LSU fan cannot complain about breaks going against them. But last year the breaks went against us, and that's just the way it goes.
And I will say this, from one standpoint, though, from the outside looking in, some of those breaks were not on the injury side. You were not riddled with a bunch of injuries, though, correct?
No, we were not. It was not an injury thing. One of the big things is we were terrible in the red zone, which is actually not really an indication of skill. Red zone stats vary wildly year to year. LSU was had one of the worst red zone offenses in the country last year. That's just one of those things. We couldn't convert inside the 20 in the touchdowns. Heck, we couldn't even turn them into field goals. Also, LSU had terrible turnover luck. Teams tend to have when they have a pass deflection, they turn it to interceptions about 20%. You know, I think it's like 15-20% of the time. LSU was down at like 10%. Meanwhile, like Ole Miss was at like 30%. That's actually not a sign of skill. That's a sign of luck. It's sort of like fumble luck. It's just interception luck. And last year, the wheel of fortuna rolled against us. And that's, you know, fair play. That's part of football. When you play a lot, when you can't blow teams out, games will come down to luck a lot. And that's, you know, LSU didn't get breaks last year, and it kind of snowballed on them. That said, Auburn just completely rolled us. They killed us 10 ways to Sunday.
We haven't looked at that stat this year, but we analyzed that last year quite a bit. I think we did on our previews even. And that was exactly what we came up with. Is it's hard to say that just because you have a high turnover margin, that made you a good team.
It's forcing fumbles is a skill, but whether that you recover that fumble, it's 50-50. It's a coin flip. And if you're well above 50%, you were lucky. And if you're well below 50%, you were unlucky. That again, that doesn't mean next year you're going to suddenly regress back to the middle. There's no rule about that. It's like flipping a coin. If you know you flip a coin 100 times and you get 60 heads, next time you're going to get 40 heads. Luck doesn't balance out. Next time, those next 100 flips, it's still 50-50 odds.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And that's an interesting point that it's like the injury bug, too. I mean, you know, an injury injury bug. Look at Ole Miss and how they ended their season with injuries.
Yeah, that Treadwell injury. We joke about how much we hate other teams, but that was one of the worst things to see. Your heart just went out to the guy. And also, the not score the touchdown on the play. That had to be one of the single worst plays in Ole Miss football since Billy Cannon. See, I can throw a trash talk.
Oh, yeah. Halloween, baby. I love it. Yeah. But, you know, one of the things I took away, you know, last year that when you watched Mississippi State, you know, LSU made that fourth quarter kind of comeback to make that game close. But State really, from an offensive standpoint, just rolled that defense, which was a shock to everybody. Obviously, it was a huge shock to State fans because no matter how good you thought that they were, you had won one out of 25 years. So if you were going to have a bad night, it was always going to happen against LSU. LSU just kind of had that number. And then to see the Auburn game and then to realize at the end of the year they finished number one ranked defense in the SEC – technically, so it's pretty interesting how they grew up over the course of the year, which leads into here. And my question would be, losing John Chavis is a big off, off season deal, especially how it went down. And then you bring in Kevin Steele, who most people and most broadcasts, everybody would basically say, hey, that's not really an upgrade, and where are you at on that? I'd like to understand exactly what your thoughts on that.
There's a lot to unpack there, so I'll start from the beginning. Really, after the Auburn game, after LSU just got decimated, what started 0-2, LSU made one of the biggest decisions of the season. They benched DJ Welter, the middle linebacker, and went all in with Kendall Beckwith. Our defense radically changed overnight. If you go back and watch the Mississippi State game, Mississippi State ran just up the middle, and it was really a failure. It was LSU bottled up a lot of those plays, but once Josh Robinson got through the line of scrimmage, the middle linebackers and the safeties did nothing, and he either got 2 yards or he got 80, and that was a failure of the safeties and the middle linebacker. And after that game, they started Kendall Beckwith, who's now going to be a junior, probably the most important player for LSU this season. He's the star player of the defense. And then also LSU started freshman Jamal Adams, who is now going to be a sophomore, and I really think sets the tone for the defense. I think he's one of the team leaders, even though he's only a sophomore. So it wasn't that the team grew up. It was actually that they jettisoned the veterans, and they just – Miles just started playing the kids. In a way, he started playing for this year after he lost to Auburn. As for the Kevin Steele, Chavis left us at a bad time. It was right after the bowl game. You were in the dead period, so LSU had to get a coach pretty quickly. They made an offer to Shoup, I think, from Penn State, and he turned him down. And that was the guy we wanted. I think once Shoup turned LSU down, LSU's attitude was we have to get a staff in place. Just we need some consistency. And I think Kevin Steele was a safe hire. It's not a wow hire. But I think the tales of his gross incompetence are grossly overstated. I just think he's a 25-year pro. He doesn't blow your doors off. He's a guy just to keep continuity going. And I think they did that because they were so close to the deadline. They just had to get someone. They couldn't have a prolonged search. I think the big thing was that I think it was just a couple hours later they signed Ed Orgeron.
Yeah.
And that is going to be a complete tone changer because this – and I don't want to badmouth John Chavis out the door. A lot of LSU fans have been. But let's be honest. LSU's had great defenses under Chavis. So I'm not going to turn around and suddenly pretend he wasn't a good defensive coordinator. That said, the big knock on John Chavis is LSU had a very bad defense in the final 2 minutes of halves. For the last two seasons, if you look at it, LSU got killed in the two-minute drill. And I don't know the reason for that, but we routinely lost one. LSU gave up big plays in those final 2 minutes. And that part of that is because Chavis played a very passive system. His defensive ends didn't rush the quarterback. They played the contain in order to hold those running quarterbacks in their lane. And that's how come LSU's leading player in sacks only had 4.5 sacks. And the year before only had 4 sacks. So this year, Ed Orgeron, the word passive I don't think is in his vocabulary. Actually, Ed Orgeron doesn't have a very big vocabulary, but I think you're going to see a much more attacking system.
I think you can understand.
Yeah, and I think what he's going to do is he's going to turn those defensive ends loose, and instead of having to play contained, they're going to rush the quarterback a lot more aggressively than they have in the previous 2 years. A lot of that's a philosophical change. I don't think that makes LSU's defense better. I just think it means it's going to be more aggressive and you'll see more sacks. I think LSU fans feel a lot better about Steele once they announce the Orgeron hire. Because I think the biggest knock on the LSU coaching staff the past 2 or 3 years is since the 2011 championship game, there's been a little bit of a malaise. That there's just kind of been this passive, whatever happens, happens. There's been no real spark. I think that's the thing LSU's been missing. And when you want a spark, you bring in a guy like Orgeron. And we also brought in a wide receiver coach. Ball, who's really kind of lit a fire on the offense. I think those position coach changes have made a big difference because I think there's a little bit more of a spark this year than there has been in previous years where it's sort of like, hey, we show up, we're LSU, we win 10 games.
Let me ask you a question. And one of the guys we're talking here locally about A&M and Chavis entering, I believe, was the analogy they were giving. and that it was not so much that he's a bad defensive coordinator, because, and we'll liken this to your current situation with Orgeron, but it's, you already said it's a philosophical difference between the two. Now, the juniors and seniors on the defensive side of the ball are used to a certain way of doing things. How have they bought into this new process and way of doing things? Are there going to be some of those junior and senior leaders that you're going to basically are just putting in their time till they make the NFL?
Well, the good news at LSU is if you're any good, you don't stick around for your senior year.
Yeah. You do have that for you. Do have, especially on the defensive side of the ball, have that going for you.
I mean, and that's actually one of the big things. We've been talking about the website. LSU has very youthful experience. It's youthful experience. The team is I can't remember. There's barely any juniors on the team. I mean, there's almost no seniors that are starting the defense. Jalen Mills is one of the few, and he just got hurt.
Yeah.
But almost everybody else is either a sophomore or a junior. I think we returned something like four sophomore starters who are now juniors. I think we returned, I think, two freshmen who are now going to be sophomore starters. So I really don't think there's a problem of, oh, these guys have been with Chavis so long, they're Chavis guys. Because right. A lot of them are brand new. If you look at the Jamal Adams, only started for about half a year. Kendall Beckwith, only started for about half a year. Trey White's a junior, but he's a cornerback who's just going to be on an island anyway. And I think he has buy-in. He's a big leader on the team. I would say our next best player on the defensive line, you have Godshaw. He's a sophomore. Lacouture is only a junior. He's only been starting for 1 year. He's a new starter. So there's not a whole lot of guys on this team who you would call Chavis guys. And honestly, the system's not going to change. They flirted with the 3-4, but they're going to stick with the 4-3. They're still going to have the Mustang package, only they're not going to call it a Mustang. They're just going to call it a nickel, which is what it always was. I think the difference isn't so much scheme, it's philosophical. Instead of reading and reacting, and there's nothing wrong with reading and reacting, it's going to be more attack-based. And honestly, that might lead to some breakdowns. You might give up some big plays like we did against Mississippi State, but we were giving up those big plays anyway, playing passively. So I think you're going to see a lot more, let's get after the quarterback, even if it means we occasionally give up a big play. Really good. Even by LSU standards, this looks like a great secondary. And so you could rush the quarterback with abandon because you're not worried about your corners getting beat. And that's a great luxury to have.
Well, and that goes back to your earlier comment about red zone defense. You know, you look at Oregon, I'm sorry, red zone offense. You look at Oregon's red zone offense. I don't know the statistics, but it probably wasn't one of the best in the country because they never made it to the red zone. They were, you know, and so that's misleading if you looked at just red zone offense and efficiency, because they rarely had a play from just 20 yards in. It was further out than that. And so when you have a defense that's going to keep those things from happening, it's only going to make your whole team better.
Yeah, and also one of the surprising things about LSU's red zone offense last year was the fact that LSU was such a good running game. We couldn't throw the ball. I mean, Anthony Jennings was terrible, but you have a guy like Leonard Fournette who broke two face masks inside the 20, only one of which was called. And that's the kind of thing that kind of tortured LSU all year, that you have this great running game and somehow they couldn't pound it in from the five-yard line. It was mystifying. And I don't want to say, hey, that's automatically fixed because it's a new year, but I do think you're going to see at least a better, more competent offense this year.
It's, well, it was addressed in the offseason. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. Look, Anthony Jennings last year, LSU fans are familiar with bad quarterback play. We're kind of we're the gourmands of bad quarterback play. Mm-hmm. And, look, we lived through Jordan Jefferson and Jarrett Lee, you know, going back and forth. We started a season with Andrew Hatch, who, you know, came down from Harvard. Let me tell you, Anthony Jennings is one of the worst quarterbacks that LSU has ever had. And that's actually saying something. We had Josh Booty. He just, and by all accounts, he's a good kid. He's a leader on the team. You know, he says all the right things. He has all the right mannerisms. He's just not very good. You cannot play in the modern game and have a completion percentage below 50%.
Yeah.
You just can't do that. He's not that mobile. The big problem is he makes bad decisions. He couldn't even hit, like, screen passes. So I think LSU's offense gets a lot better by starting Brandon Harris, not because I have great faith in Brandon Harris, just because he's not Anthony Jennings. And that's a terrible thing to say, but Jennings had a full season to prove himself, and he was awful. There's just no other way around it. Anthony Jennings, if he would have been a mediocre quarterback, LSU likely goes 6-2 in the SEC last year. But instead, he was terrible, and we went 4-4.
So you do have a quarterback. I mean, the depth.
We think. Let's, you know, yes, we think we have a quarterback.
You have a number one listed quarterback.
Right? That's right.
So from that's the million-dollar question in the SEC this year is what team has a quarterback and who's going to find that diamond in the rough? Because you just don't know. I mean, look at Tennessee. Dobbs up there, I mean, they were talking about how bad he is in practice, but you get him into a game situation and he was, you know, he shined. He was a very competent quarterback for the Vols. And so that's what's difficult about all of this talk that we've had in just almost pick a team in the SEC this year, in that you don't know what the quarterback has because there's no real game experience. What are your thoughts going into this season leading in with the quarterback competition that's been going on down there in Baton Rouge and who ultimately was listed as starter? It sounds like you believe it's the right choice.
Yeah, I do. Harris and Jennings, I think 2 days ago, were listed as an or when they released the depth chart, but Miles came out yesterday and said Harris is going to start game one. He's not ruled out Jennings playing, and that's good because you never know the health of a quarterback. It's good to have the other guy ready to play, so I don't want to write off Jennings' entire career. But I do think Harris is going to be the starter going forward, and a lot of the season hinges on that. What he has going for him is he's going to have a great running game. Fournette is an amazing running back. Geis has put up incredible stuff in practice. Looks to be not as good as Fournette, but still an incredible runner. Williams was really good in relief last year. So he has that luxury of who he can hand the ball off to. There's an experienced line in front of him. And last year the receiving core was talented but young. This year they have a little bit more experience, so they shouldn't have as many drops, but they still have that same kind of talent. LSU's receiving core should be what gets Harris through this season because they should be able to make a lot of big catches for him.
Does he have the strong arm?
He has a pretty strong arm. I mean, he threw that, you know, Mississippi State fans know about that end zone catch he threw to Malachi Dupree. Yeah. And I think that's another big thing is I think Harris is really comfortable with Dupree, who I feel is our best receiver, and Jennings is more comfortable with Darrall. So I think the big winner of this will be Malachi Dupree. I think he's going to have a breakout year because he's Harris's security blanket. And, I mean, I know State wasn't running their best defense out there. They're probably playing prevent at that time. But Dupree made some incredible catches down that stretch of the game. He really flashed his talent. He's a true freshman. He can play. And I think he's going to be a star in the league. Is it the right decision? I think it has to be just from the fact that Jennings, you knew what you had, and it wasn't it. Harris, he's still a question mark. I don't want to come off and say he's Tommy Hodson. We'll see, but we don't need him to be great. Honestly, I think if you're looking at what's your platonic, you know, perfect LSU quarterback, we want him to be Allen of Arkansas. That's the exact quarterback play we want. 60% completion percentage, about 7 yards an attempt, doesn't throw a lot of picks, just enough to keep the running game, keep defenses honest. That's all LSU wants out of its quarterback. And I don't think that's asking for the world there. And if LSU can get that kind of quarterback play, I think LSU can win the West. If they get the same kind of quarterback play they got last year, if they get Anthony Jennings level, well, with the West being as tightly packed it is, we'll be looking at, you know, 6th or 7th. I do think it's funny that there's only two experienced quarterbacks in the West, and one of them, Dak Prescott, who's clearly the best one, comes. The thing is, there's nothing else coming back around him. Mississippi State ranks one of the last teams in the country in returning starts total. So you have this one experienced quarterback, but nothing experienced around him, and then all the other teams return other things, but no experienced quarterback. Yeah. So no one really has the – everyone's behind the eight ball on quarterback except for State, and they're behind the eight ball for a different issue.
Yeah.
What you got, Blair?
No, I mean, I think that's perfectly it. I think the only other thing is I know that you're doing a little bit of shuffling on the offensive line. I think with the Collins kid going, you're moving the right tackle back over to left tackle and just kind of moving around. So, but it looks like you're pretty solidified there in that world.
Yeah, we did the same thing with Collins as well. He was a right tackle. We shift him to left tackle. That's kind of a standard LSU thing. We bring him up as right tackles and then shift him to left for their last year once they get the experience. I am worried for a while they were talking about starting a freshman at center, but that's not going to happen. Now it's going to be Pocheek. He played last year at center and guard, so we'll have an experienced center. They returned three experienced linemen. Three guys we started every game last year. The other two spots will be filled by talented guys, but of course they haven't started yet, so you never know. But three returning starters on your line, you got to feel good about it. And, you know, Vidal Hawkins, he's a beast. So I'm not too worried about him shifting to the left side. And also, it's one of the things, it's easy to be an offensive lineman for LSU if you're blocking for Fournette. That guy's got great vision. He makes that line look better than it is. And they're still pretty good, but that's the kind of running back you want to be blocking for. He makes you look like a star, because if there's a hole, he'll find it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm interested to watch him this year, because I think, you know, taking that junior to sophomore leap, it's going to be intriguing to see what he actually does.
Yeah, because early in the season he was a little bit timid, wasn't quite the full player he was. I think State kind of, you know, dodged that bullet. They didn't really have to face Fournette. He only got a couple of touches. But late in the year, the Death Star was fully operational. What he did to that kid at A&M, that's going to be a highlight reel forever. Even Notre Dame, we lost that game, but he had something like 250 yards of offense total, something crazy. Fournette was the first. He broke LSU's freshman rushing record, and we've had, you know, a few pretty good freshman runners. It's funny that he was only really good, and that was disappointing. It's once again, it kind of shows where LSU fans are. It's like we're only impressed if it's great, or just the very best. And Fournette was merely really good. And I think the sophomore year, I think he will contend for the highs. There's still Chubb, so there's still a question of whether he'll even be first team SEC. But LSU is going to rely a lot on the Leonard Fournette show. We'll spread around the carries because that's what LSU does. But let's not kid ourselves. He's the franchise. He's the most important player on offense, and if he has a big season, LSU will have a big season.
All right, so who is your most important player on defense?
Oh, Kendall Beckwith. There's no question. There's no one who can back him up. No one can do what he does. He's the middle linebacker. The difference in LSU's defense between when Kendall Beckwith was in the game last year and DJ Welter was amazing. We went from, I think, the worst defense in the SEC to the best. And his backups were kind of thin at linebacker. We returned three guys with starting experience. Fourth guy has played a little. He has a lot of starting. Has a lot of experience, not starting experience. And after that, it's freshmen and sophomores. It's just all talent. So if Beckwith goes down, LSU's defense is in a world of hurt. He's the guy calling the plays. He's in the middle of the defense. He is far and away the most important player. He might not be the best player, because Trey White's got something to say about that. But if Trey White goes down, I'm pretty confident we have another cornerback who can step up in his place. If Kendall Beckwith goes down, there's no linebacker who can take his spot.
Well, let's kind of switch gears, Blair, unless there's something else, kind of look at the schedule and get an idea of where we think this is going to shake out. Is there anything else you got, Blair?
Nah, man, he's pretty much covered it.
That's why we have him. So, I look at the schedule and realistically, it bodes pretty well for you guys until your gauntlet, which every SEC team has, and that's the end of the season, really. You've got, to me, a four-game end-of-the-season sprint to the end. But, I mean, your East draw is fairly favorable with at South Carolina and hosting Florida.
Yeah, with Florida down this year and basically restarting their offensive line from scratch, this is, simply put, the easiest schedule LSU has had in probably about 10 or 15 years. This South Carolina, I don't think, is that good of a team this year. Spurrier is always a threat. Florida, they're down right now. That I think they only have like two or three offensive linemen at all returning. I mean, forget starters. This is, LSU normally has a brutal East draw, and this year suddenly we have a very, very easy one for the SEC. I don't think either team will lay down and die. But normally LSU is talking about how they have to play a much tougher schedule than Alabama and how we're going to work this out. And this year LSU is the one that has the easy schedule, and Alabama has to play Georgia and a revamped Tennessee squad who might be the second or even the best team in the East. So all of a sudden things are the complete opposite as they were before. And I can't say that doesn't make me pretty happy. We're not used to this experience where LSU is saying, hey, the schedule breaks in our favor. This is not something we're not used to sitting around as fans saying, oh, the schedule is favorable to us. And, you know, they say, you know, schedule cyclical. It just took a long time to cycle in our favor.
Right.
I mean,
that's true.
Realistically, what do you see as a win-loss?
Realistically, I still think the West is too tightly packed.
Yeah.
No team is going to run away with it. No team is going to get, you know, just completely buried. So I think almost every team's going to lose at least one, and probably every team's going to lose at least two. I predicted last year that there was going to be a three-way tie at 6-2. I think that's actually a pretty safe prediction for this year. I think there'll be enough, and if there is enough talent in the SEC, it's just who's going to be those three teams. So I think a 6-2 conference record. LSU's out of conference schedule is a joke this year. So I think 10-2 is what LSU should be shooting for. I think that's totally doable. The question is, I can't tell you which ones it's going to be because everybody's pretty much equal. You know, we could lose to Arkansas. We could beat Arkansas. We could beat Ole Miss. We could lose to Ole Miss. But I think what it is that everybody's going to kind of get their lumps. You just take the whole group of it. Hey, there's a couple of teams in the SEC, and I think we're going to do pretty well against them. And then I think we'll win our two crossover games against the East, and I think that'll be the difference.
Well, I mean, from an LSU standpoint, there's a revenge factor that aside from – you got Mississippi State away, but you get Auburn at home, you get Arkansas at home, correct?
Yes. I do like our chances against State early in the year. Basically as a revenge game, we haven't lost to State in a very long time. I think there's some payback that LSU would like in that game. The Auburn game, I think that's going to be the tone setter for the season. Auburn's a really good team, but they lose a lot on offense. People have really not been talking about just how many starters they lose. They are almost completely rebuilding their offense, and it's much better to play a team like that early than late. I think if we were playing Auburn in November, I would give the edge to Auburn. I think playing them in September, I give the edge to LSU. If LSU can win those first two games instead of going 0-2, this year they can start 2-0. It's off to the races. And then you start looking at that November brutal stretch. LSU can conceivably go into that Alabama game undefeated.
Well, just to give you an idea, Stephen, just to throw out stats right quick, because we talked about this on our last podcast, Auburn, they returned 10% of their passing, which is 78 pass attempts by Jeremy Johnson. They lose three out of their top four rushers, okay? And then they actually, I think they bring back about 45% of their receiving. So what's the dynamic of Duke Williams, number one, who's already had three incidents where he's disgruntled and they haven't even got to the season? So from the bowl game, he misses. He had issues in spring practice. He's already had the issues here. He's told his life story to his team, and it's life-changing, and everybody's good, and they understand where he's coming from now. But they have no adversity yet. How is he going to fare against not having a Sammy Coates on the other side? And so that's where a lot of people, you know, that's where Rock Thomas or whatever the guy's name, all those guys they're five-star guys, right? And that's where they're getting – they're going to plug in. It's the Alabama and the Auburn.
You mentioned Alabama because Alabama's in very much the same situation.
Absolutely.
Alabama only returns one They only return one three starters on offense and only one who is what you would call a skill position player, and that's their tight end. Yes. They lose 75% of their receptions, including their top three, right. And they lose 50% of their running game, and they lose pretty much all of their passing. And everyone thinks this is going to be fine. That's pretty much what LSU lost last year, and you can see the effects. This is not quite the, every time Alabama has plug and played a new quarterback, they've had a guy like Julio Jones or Amari Cooper to bail that quarterback out. Alabama, they return less starters on offense than any Power 5 team in the country except for Boston College.
Yeah.
They've been decimated on offense. Now, that doesn't really help LSU because by November they will figure things out. But if you want to beat Alabama, you got to beat them early, which is why they should at least be a little bit nervous about Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Everyone just kind of talking about how that's going to be another easy win, how they normally roll Big Ten teams. Alabama's breaking in almost a brand new offense. I still think they win that game because, you know, Bama and literally almost everyone on that roster is a five-star. But don't overlook that or those early season games for Alabama. It's, if you want to get to them early. Same with Auburn.
It's funny listening to you say that because that's our normal conversation about playing LSU. Because you always have such a young group coming in every year. It's like if you're going to beat LSU, you're going to have to do it early because once they get some experience under their belt, you can forget about it. And
what's funny is this is one of the few years that we didn't really lose a whole lot to the draft. We lost Lyle Collins, and I'm not going to lie, that's not an insignificant loss. But it wasn't like the year we lost six juniors from our defense. It's not like we've lost all of our – we didn't lose a 3,000-yard passer, 2,000-yard receivers, and a 1,000-yard rusher. Mm-hmm. The losses this year were very manageable. We return, I think, seven starters on both sides of the ball. That's pretty normal return. LSU, this is one of the first times since 2011 where LSU pretty much returns the team from last year with just normal personnel losses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. This is one of those years where it's not going to take a ramping up period except for breaking in the quarterback.
Blair, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I mean, just taking a look at the schedule, the Mississippi State game, I think it's more crucial than the Auburn game because I do agree with you because I think the Auburn, getting them early at home, you know, it's going to be a night game. It's going to be awesome, and I'm looking forward to it. And there's a lot of, you know, Auburn is getting all of this hype, you know, and Jeremy Johnson is just getting dominated. I think the State game, because it's traditionally been something that LSU's won, it's the first night game or it's the first home game for State because they're playing at Southern Miss. It's at 8:15 at night. That's going to be about as raucous of a crowd that they faced, and that's where I'm interested to see. Because the last time, you know, because you'll hear those people say, you know, you saw Harris when he played at Auburn and it was too big. The environment was too big.
I agree with that entirely.
And the environment at State with that new stadium expansion has totally changed. And I've been a State fan forever. I went to the Auburn game last year and I was completely blown away at what it sounds like in that stadium with that closed in. It was the most change I've ever seen in that stadium from just a sound standpoint and the intimidation. And you saw that in that Auburn game. They were completely shook in the first quarter that it was 21-0 before you knew it. So I think for both teams, I think for Mississippi State, that's a huge game for them because, you know, you've got Dak Prescott coming back. You've got all these supposed starters that are gone that, you know, the way Mullen kind of does things is, you know, it's a little bit misleading, and a lot has been said about that. But I'll be interested to see because I think offensively State's going to be really, really good. And defensively they're going to have to grow into it. But, man, that's going to be an early test. It's going to be awesome.
No, I think
they
right
both have cupcakes to start with.
Yeah.
Get warmed up. Yeah.
I think you're right because Brandon Harris in that Auburn game just – that was a tough place to make your first start. And you don't want to make your first start on the road in the SEC. And so basically he'll have one start against a chump team, and then his second start and his second SEC start is going to be at State on the road.
Yeah.
You're right. That's going to be a big challenge. One of the things that cost him in the Auburn game, though, wasn't just that Harris played poorly, which he did. He got hurt, and so that makes everything – harder. But also the defense did not help. Yeah. Auburn, I think, made two huge plays early in that game, and LSU was in a 14-0 hole real early in the first quarter. So what LSU really needs in that game is not just Harris to play well. What they need more importantly is for the defense to not give up those big plays, the state that they did last year.
Yeah.
And also, I think there's a little bit of a point of pride there. State really took it to LSU last year, not just on the field, but also physically. Look, Dylan Day has become a curse word in Baton Rouge. And look, he stomped one of our players. You know, he did. He didn't even get a personal foul for it, but he stomped one of our players. That state team physically intimidated an LSU team, and LSU makes it a point of pride for that never to happen to them. Because LSU is a team that likes to play mean and nasty, and then State came into our house and played meaner and nastier. Yeah. And so I think there's going to be a real point of pride for LSU to go to State and show that they can do the same thing. So we might see a penalty fest, to be perfect. Yeah. I mean, not just a cranked-up crowd, but you might see your share of dirty hits in that game, just because both sides kind of want to show the other one who's the baddest boy on the block. Yeah. But, yeah, I think for LSU, it's not just Brandon Harris that needs to play well. It's the defense, because the defense got – they played their worst game of the season against State last year. If not, the worst game of the season was their first road trip against Auburn. So either way, you can combine that into one thing. So it'll be their first road game and at State. The defense needs to make a statement in that game. So I think you're right. That is a key game, because I think a lot of LSU fans are thinking, this is a win.
Yeah.
We need to beat Mississippi State. If LSU loses to State to kick off the year, there's going to be a lot of reevaluation going on real quick. Yeah. Oh. Lose to Auburn, we're not going to be happy, but I still think – I think LSU fans would accept the loss to Auburn.
Auburn's not being picked by everybody to finish last in the SEC West.
Exactly.
So, that's great stuff. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for being on. Is there anything else – you want? Definitely plug your site, but anything else you want to leave us with before we close this thing up?
No, our site is www.andthevalleyshook.com. We're on the SB Nation. You can follow me on Twitter at ATVSposer, where I'll also say stupid things about punk rock and things you don't care about. I might occasionally put up a picture of my kid, which I'm sure is newsworthy. The one thing I'll say is that last year was a great year for the SEC, particularly the SEC West. The East is beginning to catch up, so this could be a great year for the SEC, but the gap is closing with the rest of the league. I think the triumphant, you know, pounding our chest SEC chance, Pac-12, they can make an argument they're every bit as good as the SEC now. We are no longer so far ahead of the pack that it's, you know, the SEC and everyone else. It's not that the SEC has fallen back to the world, it's that the rest of the world has caught up, and that's great for college football. I think the first year of the playoffs was fantastic. It was really exciting. I think we're in a new era of college football, and it's really exciting to be right at the cusp of it, and I'm really hoping that, you know, every conference pulls their weight. I think we're at that point.
Good stuff.
Good deal, man. You got to make sure that on October 24th y'all don't completely destroy Western Kentucky, which is Shane's alma mater and my wife's alma mater. So, you know.
Who doesn't love Big Red? I mean, that's the greatest mascot in sports. We'll go easy on him.
That's right. We might have to make a trip down to Baton Rouge, man.
It's fun.
You guys played LSU. Western's played LSU before in the past, and it's not.
Yeah,
and it's not been the easiest game. I mean, it's at the end of the game, it's a victory, but it's not like the 45-point spread. You know, Western going to Division One since 2010. They've only been in Division One for 5 years. I mean, they've really, really made themselves a strong program for what they are. I mean, they're still in Conference USA, but they've got a great quarterback. We're going to be excited to see him Thursday night against Vanderbilt. And
yeah,
so
that's going to be a beatdown. Just hate to tell you.
So they might be 1-1 against SEC opponents this year. So, yeah. Blair, anything else you got?
Nah, man, it's good stuff.
Well, you can find Blair at Blair Smiley on Twitter. You can follow me at SECSRT. That's I tweet for the podcast and everything else. But thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and we're going to call this podcast done.